Welcome back to Spherio. We are here on WMBR Cambridge. You are listening to the local voice of our hemisphere, Spherio. Before we go away, I'd like to share one sad news with you. It's regarding the recent murder of one human rights activist in Russia. Her name is Natalia Estemirova. She is one of the leading members of the Russian human rights NGO Memorial in Grozny, Chechnya. She was abducted on Wednesday at around 8:30 a.m. local time. She was dragged into a white car and driven off into an unknown direction. According to witnesses, she managed to shout out that she was being abducted. Mm-hmm. Her work was crucial in documenting human rights violations in the regions, such as torture and other ill treatment, unlawful killings, enforced disappearances since the start of the second Chechenian War in 2000. She also devoted herself to providing assistance to displaced people and other socially disadvantaged groups. No one has claimed responsibility, but colleagues believe that she was killed for her human rights activities. Later on Wednesday, the Russian news agency ITAR TASS reported that her body had been found in the neighboring republic of Ingushetia with gunshot wounds. The terrible tragedy of the killing of Natalia Estemirova is a crime that should be denounced by the authorities, and every effort must be made to bring those responsible to justice. So, yeah, I encourage you guys to, I guess, send petitions to the Russian government to ask for investigations into further matters. But at the same time, you know, let us remember the work that she's done and the cause that she fought for.
Sounds good to me. So it's almost time for us to go.
Aw,
how sad. But we did want to remind you, actually, that the Festival de Betances is happening this weekend. And it's the 36th year of the Festival de Betances.
Wow.
Yeah, it is a tradition, an icon, if you will, of Latino culture in the Boston area. A sort of centerpiece of the Inquilinos Boricuas en Acción and Villa Victoria's Center for the Arts. And things are starting off tonight. Actually started while Spherio was getting underway with a big parade. And they have an event going on this evening. Things all day tomorrow. Plena Libre, famous Plena band, is the headliner at the end of the night. Day after tomorrow, Sunday, there's just stuff going on all day, including the famous Palo Encebao, the grease pole competition, in which people have to try and make it all the way to the end of a grease pole to grab the money at the end. And it's a traditional Puerto Rican game that you do at festivals, and it's actually pretty hilarious to watch, as you might imagine. So all kinds of amazing stuff going on there. We don't have time to tell you all about it. The whole thing takes place at the community Villa Victoria in Boston's South End, located at the Orange Line stop of Back Bay. And you can find out more about it at their website, villavictoriaarts.org. Y como estábamos diciendo, el Festival de Betances este fin de semana ya empezó, de hecho, con una parada a las 6 de la noche y continúa hoy, esta noche, hasta domingo también. Mañana tienen el Día de la Juventud, un montón de grupos musicales. El domingo también el Palo Encebao, el famoso. Y Plena Libre termina la noche el sábado. Tito Rojas termina el festival domingo en la noche. Todo eso en el South End de Boston, cerca de la parada Back Bay en la línea naranjada. Y esperamos que si se encuentran por allá en Boston, que pasen por ahí, porque realmente va a ser tremenda pachanga. Ok, y así terminamos más una noche de Spherio. Here we are, one last night of Spherio. And we'll catch you again next Friday. Oh. All right, my dear. Stay tuned for Music for Human Beings.
مرحبا في Music for Human. I am الدكتور جالس السكران and I welcome you. So we have with us today Professor Levine, but he's wandering around somewhere, I think looking for himself. But we are also joined by Ivan the Mellow. Ivan, welcome.
Добрый вечер, дорогие товарищи. And I think that Dr. Levine will soon find himself and find what a deep pleasure it is to be here.
It always does seem very deep, our pleasure in having Professor Levine with us. But you say that every time, you know, what is that Russian phrase you say, Ivan?
Добрый вечер.
And what does it mean?
Good evening, in Siberian.
It's very, very apt.
Yes.
And, well, it does seem that Professor Levine has managed to join us at last.
Yes, I had a little journey just now of discovery, one might say.
And what did you find?
Well, I found that to connect various streams of energy, often you need an adapter. Sometimes there'll be a very strong energy coming in one direction. It could be either electricity or some sort of spiritual energy. And your body or your mind or your headphones might require a different frequency of energy. And you might need to find either a physical adapter for your headphones or perhaps a spiritual adapter for your life.
Yeah, it's so often that two people come together and something just isn't right. You know, they would like to connect, but there is some mechanism which is missing. And if only there were those sorts of adapters available.
That's right. I mean, for the headphones, one, of course, can purchase an electrical adapter or an audio adapter. And if only we had a spiritual Radio Shack to cater to our emotional and spiritual needs as well.
Well, to do some of that catering, we have with us for the first time Lilith the Sorceress. Lilith, welcome.
Hello.
So, Lilith, you are in the sorcery business.
I am, yes.
And how is the sorcery business now?
It's very strong with the economy. One might be surprised.
There a lot of activity in the whole sorcery enterprise.
Yes. It's very rough right now.
Yeah, I tried at one time myself to train with a sorcerer, but it ended badly. And well, let's just say that I left part of me with him.
Might I ask where you did this?
Well, the entire enterprise occurred in South America. Mm-hmm. I'd rather not be too specific on the details. It was a Candomblé priest, so that should give those who are aware of these things some information. But I would advise against looking for these people. They're very passionate people.
Yes, they must want to find you. It's kind of we have to find the people that need the help. It's odd for them to come to us.
Yeah, it's very. It was a damaging, scarring experience being there in South America, with the mosquitoes.
Physically,
it was
scarring?
And emotionally also. Mm-hmm.
Well, I know the name Lilith is very interesting in Jewish mysticism and in general mythology. Of course, Lilith is the female demon of sexual temptation in Jewish mysticism. And she's known to visit sleeping men in the night and to torment them with desire.
Yes.
And I wonder, was this a given name, or was it a name that you adopted at some point when you became a sorceress?
It was more a name that I adopted. I'm not sure that I've ever snuck into anyone's room and...
But maybe into their dreams.
Maybe into their dreams, yes. I would rather leave that private.
Well, it's interesting, this issue of adopting new names, because there's also this thought that somehow the name of a thing defines its properties and its spiritual characteristics. And often in modern times, we think that language is random. A name, like a cat or a dog, is just a sound we make to refer to things. But in more traditional and spiritual streams of thought, we think that names actually signify the essence of a thing, and that one can actually change their name, and by changing their name, they can change their attitude of their life, such as, you know, of course, writers do this all the time. They change their name to be a little shorter or cooler. And I wonder if without knowing it, without realizing it, they're actually affecting their spiritual personality.
It has some effect on their own personality, their existence and the relationship with the universe.
That's right.
Well, you look at actors. They constantly... Tom Cruise was not born Tom Cruise, right. And it kind of makes you wonder if he's just spending his entire life acting off of the screen as well.
Well, maybe we're all spending our lives acting,
mm-hmm.
for ourselves and others.
Well, let's open up the circle to the wider area. The show, of course, is not about us. It's about coming together. And so if you'd like to call in, we have two lines. The number is 617-253-8810. Marhaban, caller, you are on the air.
Hi. I was wondering if you guys had heard of Professor Poopy Pants. Story of Captain Underpants.
Is that a nom de guerre, or is that also...
Yes.
So it's a pen name.
Well, actually, the story is Professor Poopy Pants was a very brilliant scientist, and at some point he went crazy because no one would believe his ideas and his, you know, pay attention to what he was producing because of his silly name. That was his really real name, Professor Poopy Pants. I think his first name was Derek, but Poopy Pants is a pretty unfortunate last name. So he actually had some sort of a mechanistic spider robot that he sat in, and he pretty much wound everyone up in silk and forced everyone to change their names according to a kind of a code that he had, so that everyone's name was like, you know, Trisha, you know, Urine Bottom, or Fruit Loops McGee Poop, or whatever it was. So everyone was on the same level as him. So the same poopy name.
So now, caller, you mentioned something very interesting, which is the idea that one might be, out of the pressure of their name, they may be forced into a certain type of behavior. There's the classic story of the man who named his two sons Winner and Loser, and watched Winner become a failure in his life, because
right.
He had everything.
Live up to that expectation.
Precisely. Whereas Loser became a successful sandwich shop owner in Brooklyn.
Was that a Ray's Pizza?
I'm not sure. Not sure the name of the shop, but
I don't know if there are a lot of other shops other than Ray's Pizzas in Brooklyn, so it's probably one of those.
Well, going back to this issue of names being given to us versus our own adoption of names, I've always been a very strong advocate of the idea that names should not be given. Names should not be bestowed upon others. Rather, children should be left unnamed until they're old enough to choose their name for themselves. So it's really sort of the first cruel act we commit to our children when we name them without their permission.
Well, I mean, and it's also kind of a fluid thing, because I don't know that I'm... You know, I only recently would be able to create a name for myself, and I'm lucky. I think I have the right name, but, you know, if you asked me when I was 10 what my name should be, I wouldn't know. And even at 16, 17, 18, I wouldn't have known. I probably would have gone with something silly. Captain Underpants. So I think, you know, kids maybe should be able to choose their name, but you got to be able to change it, too. There's got to be a, you know...
But caller, you believe that you were actually given the right name? I mean, do you think that you grew into it, or that it grew into you? How did that happen? Was it always the right name?
I think it was a little bit of both. My name is Alexander, which means protector of the wise, or wise protector of mankind, rather.
I think Alexander means conqueror.
Well, that's one definition, but another definition is, you know, I mean, they're kind of related. If you look it up, the etymology is actually like defender of man, defender of mankind.
Well, Alexander, stay with us. Let's bring another voice in. All right, so much for that one.
I wonder.
Silly.
Yeah, caller two's name would probably.
It was probably D-bag or something.
I think he was telling us what it was.
That could be. Yes.
It might be. Unfortunately, these FCC regulations forbid us from really saying how we feel.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the FCC can be a heavy burden to bear.
It can, but we we bear it gladly.
And because, do you?
Well, no.
Yeah.
But there it is. You know, we have to live in the, you know, we're part of the fabric of society and whatever society demands. The matrix.
Yeah, this is a constant theme in my books where I talk about this struggle between society and the bonds it forces upon us in the form of clothing and shoes versus the true innate desire we have to be free and to cuss on the air. And somehow we have to walk this fine line and allow ourselves to develop as individuals and yet to meet our social responsibility and to live within the fabric of society.
And every once in a while we could just use a fake name and swear all we want. And I think that's really why America has been so successful.
Yeah, it's because a fake name or even a company can exist and then exist with the same rights and responsibilities as a person and then subsequently disappear.
Yeah, I mean, totally. I usually use my real name on the internet when I'm, you know, talking to people, posting comments on blogs and stuff. But every once in a while, I just want to let loose, drop some F-bombs, tell people their T's and tweez and FTs, and I make up names and I post as that, and no harm done. Everyone's happy.
How does that make you feel at the end of the day?
It makes me feel kind of free. It's kind of like a Garnier Fructis commercial is how I can put it. Kind of just frolicking around a field mostly.
Well, of course, on the radio and on the internet, nobody knows that you're a dog.
That's true. Although I don't know a lot of dogs that would be able to handle the mouse correctly. So, I mean, I'm sure some could be trained to do that, actually, you know, smaller dogs.
Well, I've heard that, of course, probably most users of the internet are humans, but there's a significant number,
sure,
I've been told, who are trolls.
Right.
I'm not sure exactly. I've never actually met a troll myself in real life, but apparently there's a significant troll population who frequents the internet.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure it's limited only to the internet. I think radio is also quite a prolific breeding ground for these creatures.
For trolls. I've also heard of these shock jocks whose goal primarily is to offend, and it's so wonderful to have a forum where there is no offense.
You could say that we are shock jocks in reverse, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
We're
unshock jocks.
Yeah,
lobotomy jocks.
We attract all of the flies, like our current caller.
Our current or our previous caller?
Or the totality of our callers is attracted to the scent.
Now, Lilith, I've heard that trolls are very useful in the casting of various spells and the creation of various potions.
Yes.
Sorry to interrupt for a second. I'm about to take a shower, so I should probably let you go, because I don't want to shock my jock. So, see you later.
Well, may there be blessings in the water there, caller. Thank you for joining us for this brief time. If anyone else would like to call and join in our discussion with myself, Dr. Janice Sakran, and my three co-hosts. The number is 617-253-8810.
Now, I've heard, going back to our new co-host, Lilith, I've heard that the sorcery profession, it's often said that the pay is very low, but it's more than compensated by the strange stories that one collects.
Yes, this is very true. There have actually been plenty of books written that sorcerers are actually able to make quite a bit of money off of on a very commercial level.
Well, those are usually denigrated as the TV sorcerers.
Yes.
Of course, we know, like, Dr. Phil is not really a doctor, and many TV sorcerers are not true sorcerers, but rather...
They don't actually have accreditation or the ability to transmogrify or transmit or transport various objects, ideas, scents, and flavors. And so they don't actually qualify according to many of the standard definitions of sorcerers or sorceresses.
So apart from proper accreditation, is there any way to tell apart genuine sorcerers from her?
Yes, there actually are quite a few. Some of them tend to have longer hair and fingernails, and this is due to the fact that we can actually control our hair growth and our fingernail growth and the minerals and vitamins in our body and when they expel and the dead cells. And true sorcerers, you can tell, can grow their hair up to an inch in a day. Other ones can't. That's just something very basic.
Mm-hmm. That one would expect out of the... Even the budding sorceress would be able to control these kinds of growths and whatnot.
Now, I should just say for our listeners that Lilith here has four attendants who came with her to carry her hair behind her, which...
The train.
The train of the hair.
Yeah, which is very long and lustrous.
And we would ask the attendants to come on the air, but they've been rendered mute through, I believe, some sort of incantation.
Well, they've actually they were asked to be rendered mute so that they could be within my presence most of the time.
Because our minor exposure is safe, but generally speaking, one must be cautious about these things.
Yes, absolutely. I can never be married.
Now, I've wondered, from a New Age perspective, what we could learn from this idea of sorcery. And I think that as a New Age practitioner, we often have to think about our desires, our true desires, and how our desires can interact with what's possible in the world. Of course, on, I think we've mentioned this once before, but on the French college entrance exam, one of the essay questions is it absurd to desire the impossible? And this question has vexed philosophers and religious thinkers for many centuries, but the important thing for us is to think about what we desire and to understand it, and maybe even to control it to some degree. And this idea of sorcery allows us to imagine what we would accomplish, or what we would bring about if we had infinite power, if we could cast a spell upon anyone and make them feel any way we desired towards us.
Yeah, I think real ultimate power is a dangerous thing. It's like... I think an appropriate analogy for the non-sorcerous lay person would be that of the bicycle lock. So, you know, if I were interested in purchasing a bicycle lock, I would think to myself, what is the quality of the bicycle lock that would render it ideal? And I think that quality would be that it is unbreakable without the secret code, which only I possess. But the danger in this line of reasoning, of course, is in forgetting the secret code.
Which we so often do.
and then having an unbreakable lock on my bicycle.
Well, in my youth, I rode a bicycle when I still had the use of my legs, and I was in Oxford University at the time studying religious thought and the history of intellectual ideas, and I locked my bicycle to a post, and my key stopped working afterwards, and so my bicycle was locked there, and it seemed useless to me. So I contacted several thieves, and I asked them to help me extricate my bicycle from the lock. And so I brought them with me to the campus, and we were spending the night working on the lock. It took us many hours. And interestingly enough, a British policeman stopped by with his baton, and he said, "Young man, what are you doing here?" And I said, "This is my bike, and I must release it from its bonds." And he said, "Carry on, carry on." And I realized how easy it was. Sometimes you think you're stuck, you think that you're trapped, mm-hmm. or tied down, and sometimes all it takes is just to try and release yourself, and you can do it.
It may have been your academic robes that suggested to him that you were not the common thief.
Right, but what's not commonly understood is that academics get paid very little money, and many of them are actually thieves.
And it certainly would be in their interest
to wear the robes
and to be thieves.
Of course, the robes are very dark, and they work very well for cat burglary.
To get back to the bicycle analogy, I often run into people that have this innate desire or need to lock their bike up to someone else's bike. It happens so often, and they don't know that they're immobilizing the other bike when they're doing this, and it's...
And imagine in that situation being with that unbreakable lock.
Mm-hmm.
Let's bring that voice back on the air with us. Caller, welcome. Caller?
Hello?
Yes, caller, welcome. Welcome to the air.
Oh, hey. I just had a great scrub down. I made up a song in the shower, and it was great.
Well, please share with us, caller.
Sure. Goes a little bit like this. I'm in the shower. It's like a flower, because I'm in the shower. I'm getting clean. I'm in the shower. It's like power, because I'm in the shower. Boop doop doop doop. It's pretty long, but that's basically the gist.
Well, that's very touching, caller. I can see once again, I think the bicycle analogy would come into play here, because, you know, I think many of our listeners may not have been deeply touched and moved by the song, unable to understand the subtlety there. But truly,
right.
can we imagine?
Pretty bad song.
No, but imagine if we were all moved to tears or to psychosis by a song, how tragic that would be. Really, infinites are a dangerous thing.
Well,
I think the military actually experimented with a lot of stuff. There's certain sounds that can make you psychotic.
Well, of course, everyone here in the studio can see that I've been crying for the last 20 seconds. I have tears streaming down my face. After my deep studies and meditation, I became extremely sensitive to the power of music, and I actually found myself unable to listen to any sort of sentimental music without immediately having to check myself into a sanitarium. So
okay,
I really...
Okay.
This music that you created, I think, was perfect for me because it was felt extremely emotional to me, and I had an extreme emotional reaction. But anything stronger or more sentimental would have forced me to go leave the air.
Mm. Well, actually, I think you're unaware that I helped you through that.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yes.
So you actually exerted, unbeknownst to any of us, really, some calming, centering influence.
Yes.
Over just Professor Levine, or over...
Over everyone. That song was beautiful, and it was overpowering, but I could feel what was happening in the room, and I took care of it.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
That's nice.
And caller, you know, are there other meditative thoughts or thoughts of a deep quality that occur to you during your ritual washings and ablutions?
I came up with a new method of washing my genitals. I'm kind of doing it in kind of a triangular shape. So like one move down, one move across. And then I'm done.
It's
been a lot of time.
I mean, like, you know, often when I'm bathing, it occurs to me that I'm not only washing off layers of dirt and other real estate that have accumulated over the past season, but also that I'm washing away any sins that my hands or my elbows have committed, or I
throw a lot of bows in your day.
Yeah, precisely. I like to imagine that all of the unhappiness is flowing out of my ears and down the hair on my ears and into the water and making it murky. And
now you sound like a man who has a lot of ear hair kind of on the outside of your ear. Is that true?
Well, you know, caller, it's not about the hair, but it's about the attention to grooming that we take. And it's, you know,
well, I mean, but the ancient Chinese Indians used to say that when you have a lot of thoughts coming in and out of your head, you grow some ear hair kind of on that outer ridge.
Well, I've heard it said that when one attains a certain spiritual level, and I haven't attained this myself personally, but perhaps the good doctor has, one mixes the mental and spiritual state with the physical world and with the physical body to the degree that when one is showering and wishes to release the negative energy and the sins, some form of black liquid will ooze from the ears and will actually represent the release.
What, blood?
No, it's a black, thick, oily liquid, I believe.
Like a bile-like substance.
So do you use, like, teapons, or how do you deal with cotton? Tape cotton around that? How do you deal with it? Like, it would be bad if that just happens in a job interview or baby shower or something.
Well, you know, it's something that can be kept under control. And, I mean, when I was in my youth, it caused me a great deal of spiritual distress. But I realized that it can be controlled with a lot of meditation and the liberal application of Miracle Grow and eggshells. And
what does it taste like?
I've never tasted my ear bile emissions.
What do your girlfriend say it tastes like?
Well, of course, the good doctor, since his wife left, has lived a monastic life, I believe.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Victor Jealous.
Well, you know, abstinence.
Well, I'm sure you've learned a lot.
Yeah, it you know, it teaches you
about masturbation and cooking and sleeping alone.
And running and a lot of exercise and.
Of course, someone who has achieved high levels of religious and spiritual awareness is never truly alone, but is always visited by heavenly beings and heavenly bodies, which impart knowledge and wisdom.
And so you do get with chicks.
Well, caller, I think it may be instructive to realize that I am really very, very old at this point. So,
well, like 40, 50?
Well, let's just say that the desires of the flesh pale in comparison with the desires of the mind and the spirit.
So you have kind of a I don't know what the word is, a fruity way of looking at things in your life. Kind of, you know, I'm not sure if round and sweet.
If fruity is the right way, but maybe holistic. We try to look at the world in a way that incorporates all of our senses and experiences at this point.
Well, of course, there's this tension within different streams of meditative and New Age wisdom. on the one hand, we have this school of thought which says that one should abstain from the world, one should withdraw to release, to achieve true release. And the other view says that one should live within the world, but imbue every act with pleasure and meaning. And I wonder what the, in the field of sorcery, what the appropriate view is in one's stance towards the world.
Well, as you know, I travel with four people, but I am unmarried. I can never be married.
Do you guys just all get down sometimes?
Of course, I believe a sorceress who, if she were to get married, she would immediately lose any power that she had.
Absolutely, it would all be handed to the male.
Well, and I've heard it's not uncommon for women of power to destroy their lovers, you know, in the course of things.
There was a lover early in life, Marilyn's his name, and it did not work out, to say the very least. I don't really want to go into the details.
Yes, I think it would probably be extremely unpleasant to engage in carnal activity and to be so enraptured within it. And then when one emerges from this rapture, to realize that one's lover has become a burnt crisp.
It is deadly, yes. It's
or
the heat of the moment is really heat. It really is heat. And you get
electromagnetic.
Well, and
where?
And for sorceresses that favor transmogrification, or that happen to be strong in that area or have instincts towards that, the effects are almost unimaginable. I mean,
you can turn into a cat.
A pile of rose petals is not an uncommon sight.
Now, I've heard that the worst possible
a sack of potato
object
chips
to be transmogrified into is a pile of weak old newspapers.
Really?
Yeah, because they're just so dry, they're just waiting to catch on fire.
Well, no one cares at all about weak old newspapers.
It's old news.
It's old news. A day or two or even three has some worth and value.
Mm-hmm.
The editorials, perhaps.
Well, I think also the caller has a point. I've seen a stack of newspapers soaked with coffee and then dried, and it's really the lowest of the low there.
Yeah, but it smells pretty good. I mean, if you burn that for incense, that's a little trick, you know. It smells great.
Let's try bringing a second voice, and hopefully they won't be, as exciting as some of our earlier calls. Caller 2, welcome.
Caller, this is, Ted.
Welcome, Ted.
Horse's head?
Ted. Michael Jackson's burning head.
Oh, I was just about to talk about Michael Jackson.
Michael Jackson's burning head caught on fire.
You're darn right.
It did in the 80s, yes.
That must have been pretty painful
I've heard
for
that.
The old MJ.
Callers, is this a metaphor, or...
He was in a Pepsi commercial, and they just set his head the frick on fire.
We're only going to remember the good things.
His hair was just so covered in Astroglide and Astro Lube that he just was like a big canister of gasoline. And there was just one spark that flew off from a giant can of Pepsi, and it just set his whole head on fire. There's a video that just came out. You guys should definitely watch it.
Doesn't it all really just start with one spark?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
1992, was that in?
Just one of those stupid years, you know. And he never recovered. He started doing a lot of cough syrup at that point, and he became addicted to cough syrup, and he never got off it. That's one of the reasons he died. They found some cough syrup in his body.
See, callers, I think this all ties back into what we were saying earlier about a great deal of potential also being dangerous because of the possibility of uncontrolled release in fire, and you know, all these possibilities,
yeah.
All as Lilith
having
mentions,
kids.
From a single spark, which is so dangerous.
Now, of course, that single spark is made all the more dangerous when one is doused with hairspray and such.
Yep.
And I wonder if we can take that as a metaphor for life in general.
I can dig it.
There are many sparks around, and each one is sufficient for a conflagration.
Mm-hmm. Your spark for me, Victor Jealous.
Well, thank you, caller, and really all of you are my sparks here.
Yes, Lester Woods.
You guys are like
witch.
Michael Jackson, right?
Well, I'm not sure in how many ways we are like Michael Jackson.
Well, we'd like
we're all part man, we're all part woman, part white, part black. We all like to sing, and we all wish we could do the moonwalk better.
And laugh at each other when our faces get caught on fire.
Yeah.
It's like watching it over and over again on rerun television.
Well, I think it is quite true that we all have some...
I was in
male
a mental hospital, and we watched a lot of that television on the show Shower. They keep it on as the guardians of the hospitals. That they watch the television, they watch the shows on the show Shower. And we like it when our faces are on fire.
Shut up.
Torture.
Yeah, I can't say that I've ever had my face on fire, but it's not one of those experiences that I'm eager to have.
Well, I haven't...
I'm sorry for what I said.
As well, I haven't had my face on fire, but I have had an experience after some very intense, euphoric meditation. Of course, meditation...
Do you have a flame behind your head, like the Buddha?
Well, I believe I had a flame under my skin.
Like
because
that.
My skin was very hot to the touch and was red afterwards, and in fact, I had a very strong tan.
Mm-hmm. Were you meditating, or were you doing crystal meth?
No, this was. There are two forms of basic meditation. One is silent meditation, where one seeks to experience silence and emptiness.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another form of meditation, where one seeks to ascend into euphoric higher realms. And this is a very powerful and dangerous experience because of the flames that can be involved under the skin of the
especially
face.
If you make it yourself, just like you're creating a total gaseous chamber for yourself in that trailer.
One of the positive experience though was that I had a very nice tan afterwards for several months.
Cool.
Well, as the sorceress Lilith mentioned, for us mere mortals, it really can be challenging to achieve the physical perfection that we've all achieved, ear hair notwithstanding. But for others, it's a matter simply of focusing one's energy into having their skin be more receptive to melanin giving oneself a rash because of the liberal application of the wrong oils.
Or the wrong rock salts.
Or whatever it may be. Perhaps inhaling too much of the wrong incense.
Too much crystal meth, like that's number one, I think. I don't know why you guys didn't mention that. It's number one for me. You gotta, everything in moderation, I think that's what my grandpa always said, and that's what I do.
Yeah, that might be a reasonable lesson there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, of
can't
course,
have too much fire under your skin. Really.
I think moderation is difficult to define.
Well, there is a split within the New Age movement between those who prefer only naturally grown and organic agents of deeper insight, such as mushrooms, and those who believe in creating new forms. Of course, Timothy Leary was a very large advocate of this idea of creating new forms of potent hallucinogens.
Mm-hmm.
He created LSD in order to artificially heighten our spiritual experiences.
Timothy Leary actually approached me one time about...
How'd he look?
He looked old. He looked tired.
What did he approach you about? Though.
He approached me about an amalgamation of different substances he was attempting to...
Yes, I have heard that LSD was actually inspired by a traditional witching brew.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and he was there are certain elements that don't mix well, much like in chemistry or something. And, and he was mixing the wrong things, and it got back to us.
Did you puke?
Pardon?
Did you puke when you took it?
No, I don't. I didn't take it.
Oh, well,
yeah.
Good.
I mean, there is a third movement that Professor Levine did not mention, which is my own movement, which is that you know, all of these substances really just take what's already in your brain, both the organic and the synthetic substances, and they rearrange things. And we're right there, you know. We can rearrange these things for ourselves. We don't need external agents to do the rearranging.
Dude, you know, I was just talking to my friend about this last night. I've done a lot of cough and colds in my day. You know, like cough syrup, like MJ. And, you know, you just go to CVS, just get a bottle of Max Tussin, down that, and, you know, it's terrible. I would never recommend it, but after I had those experiences, I found that through meditation, I could get right back to that spot that I had left at.
Now, I've heard that, of course, in our day and age.
We should probably legalize LSD, make some places where you can legally go and take it, because that's not the same thing for the old consciousness there, guys.
Well, medical LSD, of course.
I was told the same thing, too, from several different sources, and let me tell you, it's not good for the mental process of positivity of life.
I've heard medical LSD is a budding movement in some states, mostly Alaska. But
Sarah, she's going places. I don't know what she's got up her sleeve.
Apparently, a lot of our callers are from the chemistry department of MIT.
Kinsey?
Chemistry department.
Oh.
Hmm. Well, speaking of this idea of rearranging the neurons and particles in one's brain, in our day and age, of course, self-help is very popular, especially within the New Age movement, this idea of helping oneself, do it yourself. And I've heard that there's this new idea of do-it-yourself neural brain surgeries.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. And
you know, there's a book called The Brain That Changes Itself. Have you read that?
No, I haven't read it, caller.
You should check it out for us.
Well, I believe the most common operation procedure is actually self-lobotomy.
Yeah, with a gun.
Well, simply, you know,
gun-to-face surgery.
I mean, that certainly is one way to go about removing one's brain, caller, but I've met many people who just let that organ shrivel and let it dry up in their skulls, and they walk around like zombies, not bothering to look at the beautiful asphalt. And
there's so many pieces of like glass in it, just sparkles.
All the straight buildings and the creation that's all around us. There are rushing cars and the highways, the big dig,
TV shows,
various bridges.
Even trash is really beautiful if you're high enough.
Well, of course, one of the deepest appreciations in modern life is the ability to appreciate reality TV shows. And I found that people who allow their brain to deteriorate to a very strong degree are no longer able to appreciate these programs.
Yeah, people become only able to appreciate large carbohydrates and various other mind-altering substances.
Mm-hmm.
Sugars, caffeine.
Like donuts. Devil dogs.
Yeah, these devil dogs and various other things. And really, if you have the right frame of mind, I think there is beauty in these things. Plastic.
And of course, we here in the New Age community actually also advocate for return to the old, so to speak, New Age ways, the ways of witchcraft and sorcery, as opposed to these mind-altering herbs and chemical agents that our callers seem to be so attached to. Also, so just to get back to this topic of sorcery and witchcraft.
Mm-hmm. And Lilith, one thing that I recall from the Candomblé priest, which I knew, was that he was he had a large number of familiars about him, lots of monkeys that would kidnap other monkeys, and
that's self-replication right there.
Precisely, that, like, we could replicate right now and bring another voice into the air. Let's bring another voice in. Caller 2, welcome.
NBR? Hello?
Yeah, yes, welcome.
Hi, first time caller, long time listener. Well, you guys are great.
Well, thank you for joining us. Caller, do you have any familiars?
Excuse me?
Do you have any familiars?
Familiars? Yes, I do. There are a lot of things that are familiar to me. The outdoors, one of those things.
The outdoors is quite wonderful.
And many animals. I was walking in the woods the other day, and I saw a deer right near my house. And I was with my son, he's 2, and I said, look, a deer. And it was the first time he had ever seen a deer in the wild, and I thought it was pretty cool.
That's amazing.
Did you guys get to ride it?
What's that?
You guys try to ride it? Deer don't really have strong backs, so it's pretty rare to get to ride a deer, but...
No, there was no
deer.
I'd
recommend it. Yeah.
Well, I wonder if the caller number 2... Have you had any good experience with plastic?
With plastic?
Yeah, we've talked about plastic several times. It's this amazing, indestructible creation of mankind.
Plastic, yes. I have had good experiences with plastic. It holds the water that I drink.
Yeah, it's amazing because finally it seems our ancient quest for immortality has been achieved. If anything, in that creation.
And I personally believe that as things such as Tupperware proliferate, eventually the world will become more and more plastic until the majority of items in the world, and perhaps the entire world itself, will be plastic.
You mean the gray goo situation? You know what I'm talking about? That'll happen with plastic?
Well, not the gray goo situation, because the for our listeners that are not familiar with various end-time scenarios, the gray goo situation refers to one possible way that the world might end. A substance might be created which is very simple but self-replicates from widely available materials until the entire Earth is converted to the same substance, some nanobotic machine that simply replicates.
So it would be kind of a clear goo, depending on what kind of plastic it was. If it was Tupperware, it'd be kind of clear with green glids, mostly.
It would have to be pretty hot to sustain such a liquid form of wax.
What? I had a question, which was, if the oil runs out, there's not going to really be a lot more plastic. So how does that factor into the future of plastic?
Well, the plastic that already exists, we can hope, simply will not degrade.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, eventually the Earth will, you know, burn up the sun.
They do make a biodegradable plastic made from corn, surprisingly.
Well,
have you ever tried to eat that stuff? It actually doesn't taste that bad. It tastes a lot better than plastic.
Well, callers, I feel so unhappy to have to end this very, very fruitful and relevant discussion, but alas, our time is...
It's 8 o'clock.
It's over.
Well, I'm glad I could get on... Talk to you guys.
Well, thank you, caller, for calling in, and please do try again to call.
I'm going to go get drunk, so take care.
So, thanks also to my co-hosts, the first time, the sorceress Lilith.
Yes.
for joining us.
Yes, thank you for having me. It was wonderful.
And thanks to Ivan the Mellow.
Спасибо огромное.
And to Professor Levine.
My pleasure in joining you was almost as deep as last week.
Our ever-deepening pleasure in having all three of you with us tonight only becomes deeper and deeper. I'm Dr. Jalis Sakran here on Music for Humans. We are New Age Talk Radio with an emphasis on you here on WMBR 88.1 FM in Cambridge every Friday at 7 p.m. Stay tuned for Hidden Gems in Plain Sight. Ma'a salama.
Safety.
Number one.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians in unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.
Let's go.